Members, I'm going to call the Jobs and Economic Development Policy Bill Committee to order. I'm going to bump around the agenda because some members are not here and we'll be waiting for them. I'm going to take my bill first. 9/922.
Don't disturb anybody else.
Representative Chair Mahoney, would you like to move your bill?
I would like to move House File 922 for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Jobs Bill. Members, this is House File 922 is a cost of living study. The House researched a bill summary in it. It is a requires the Commission of Employment and Economic Development. I can read it to you. Something that is not to be done on the House floor, read from a script. The study to calculate a statewide basic need cost of living in a similar study for all 87 counties. It must include the analysis of employment and job vacancy data and provide recommendations for assisting economic development planning of the state. Now, this has a cost of approximately $300,000. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to one of the testifiers. Mr. Hess has brought this bill forward, asked me to bring this bill forward. I think it is something that we need to do and find out what the cost of living is on a regular basis across the state so that we have a better idea of where we should and should not put our services and where we need to put more of our services. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to my witness.
Okay. Mr. Hess, please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I'm Bernie Hess. I'm with the Food and Commercial Workers Union. We represent workers in retail, food processing, and long-term care in the state. I appreciate the time for this. I'll be very brief. Often when we have discussions such as minimum wage, the cost of living, living wage, we really don't have a lot of answers to really say or see how much it really does cost to live in Minnesota. So we feel it's appropriate to chart how much income is required to meet basic needs, and that's how much for food, housing, health care, child care, clothing, transportation. This study would help us develop a basic family budget in all 87 counties. And one of the reasons that we're very interested in doing this is because counties, cities, a number of responsible government units have limited resources when it comes to economic development. When proposals are put out in front of them about a new development, either a retail development or perhaps developing a healthcare campus or some processing or manufacturing, they need to look at what type of jobs are coming in, what the job quality is at, the wages, skill sets, and a number of things. And this would help them balance and to make decisions around that and to prioritize how they're going to use the resources they have for economic development. Also, this is not a Democratic issue or a Republican issue. It's a Minnesota value that we would see that we can start measuring and getting real about what it costs to live in Minnesota, whether it's Ramsey County or you're up on the range or whatever. We'd be able to have an honest discussion about what the cost is. So I'd appreciate your support on this, and I'll stand for questions.
And members, as we've gone through the budget, and for those of you who have been on this committee before, one of the reasons I like this idea is that we get multiple requests about good ideas for economic development, which is absolutely what we're supposed to do. But it makes more sense for us to know that is there a greater need in the metro area or in southwest or southeast or central Minnesota? How do we be fair and help the most people with the limited resources that we have? So I hope you will allow me to include this in the Jobs and Economic Development Omnibus Bill. But with that, I will stand for questions.
Are there any questions? Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the author of the bill, the first question I have is this type of data already available through any other state agency?
Representative Albright,
Chair.
I believe, like with much of the information that we have in this state, it is in multiple locations and needs to be pulled together and brought forth in a form that can actually be used. So I don't think we're going to go out and, you know, well, I will defer that part of the question to Mr. Hess, but my intent is not to have them go out and do interviews and all sorts of other stuff, but to start pulling the stuff together so we can actually get a full grasp of what it will do to help this type of a committee.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a follow-up then, when we're expending this amount of money on behalf of the state, is it appropriate or fair to consider a competitive bid process to have others offer up their expertise in terms of how to get the most bang for the buck in terms of conducting the study?
Chair Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I never considered that, but I certainly am willing to sit down and have a conversation with you and try to figure it out. This has been an idea that's floated around the Capitol for a number of years, and we finally brought it to a bill at this particular point, so it's not a perspective I had looked at before.
Other questions?
Does that make sense?
Representative Kiefer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Who's Mr. Chair? Oh, there you are. Thanks. I'm wondering if the federal tax incident study would be included in the cost of living in Minnesota, because I know this is a debate, and sometimes we ask the Revenue Department to include it, and sometimes we don't. So to get a true measure, I'd like to see that included in the study. Is it?
I'm going to turn that over to Mr. Hess.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know.
We can certainly get back to you.
Any further questions? Thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Coming off of the last two questions, really, is there a standard operating procedure for doing cost of living?
Mr. Hess?
To the Chair, Representative, no. Good.
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don't know if it's in the purview, but it certainly seems that might be something we would consider, so we had something that we could live with throughout all the counties, you know what I mean? So we had a standard we could go by, and, you know, if we got to tweak it going ahead, whatever, if we keep doing this, but that's all. Thank you.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, Mr. Chair, I want to address this to you because you got out of the service more recently than I did. But it seems to me that the Department of Defense has set things such as temporary duty pay and housing, and they've got a book that lists all the locations in the United States where if someone's assigned to a certain area, it shows the cost of living in there. And I don't know if you're familiar, but, you know, some 25 years ago, I know that it was done, and I don't know if it includes all of the major communities or counties. But if you were, for example, sent on TDY to be working with the reserve in Champlin, for example, you would get a certain amount of allowance based on that, and it's based on Department of Defense regulations. So, as I say, I've been out a long time, so I don't know if it's the case.
Representative Newton, I am not up to date on how it's done now, but I'm actually in favor of this particular bill and what we're doing for the state.
Mr. Chair,
please. Yes.
And Mr. Representative Chair. Newton, I just saw that Mr. Hess has taken down some notes and. We'll likely be looking into seeing if that is correct. So hopefully catches up with you and gets the full name, address, and phone number of where you can find that for this type of a study.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from members?
I'd like to renew my motion.
One moment, please, Mr. Chair. Representative Albright has one follow-up question.
For the author, just in terms of what level of elevation is the data going to be compiled at? Will this be, maybe I heard this but I didn't listen, is it at a countywide level, at a city regional based level? What's the scope and parameter of the data to be collected?
Mr. Chair, Representative Albright, it should be collected at the county level. We're trying to do it on a county by county basis rather than, excuse me, there's over 1,000 cities. You wouldn't want to have that many. 87 kind of gives us an idea, and we may be good in, you know, as good as we can get it at a county level.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Albright. Are there any other questions? Are there any other people that want to testify or comment on this bill from the audience? Seeing none, Chair Mahoney, please renew your...
I would like to renew my motion to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the jobs and economic development policy bill.
We'll lay it over.
Thank you. Now that we have a full, a relatively full complement, I would like to our schedule. We'll go back to the schedule. First on the agenda is the Minnesota Department of Employment and Economic Development Governor's Minnesota Job Creation Fund proposal. Now there is no actual bill on it, but I wanted us to be aware of it as we get ready, because it is an integral part of the governor's budget for jobs. And so we've pulled out the language for the job creation, Minnesota Job Creation Fund, and it should be in your packet. It starts on page 20. It's Article 3, Department of Employment and Economic Development. I think that's it. Yeah. Yeah. And and I know, as I asked everyone to read the governor's bill, you read it at least once, so with that, we have the commissioner and her friend. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner. Please identify yourself for the tape and tell us about the governor's Minnesota Job Creation Fund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Katie Clark Sieben, Commissioner of Deed, and this is Kevin McKinnon, Executive Director of our Business and Community Development Team. I've spoken with the committee previously on the Minnesota Job Creation Fund, and I'm happy to have the opportunity to present the language as it was introduced in the Governor's Budget Bill for Deed, authored by Representative Mahoney, Chairman Mahoney. Funding the Minnesota Job Creation Fund is one way the legislature can arm the team at Deed with the tools we need to attract the fastest growing companies with the highest quality jobs. As the world continues to shrink and globalization increases, the battle for attracting fast growing companies and stable investments is increasingly competitive. As we will discuss with the Minnesota Investment Fund today, Minnesota has modest economic development incentives for businesses. The Minnesota Job Creation Fund and MIF that we'll talk about are complementary programs to provide diverse and flexible tools to incent top businesses to expand or locate in Minnesota. Since 2004, one of the state's most utilized incentive programs has been JobZ, which is set to expire in 2015. Over time, Deed modified JobZ to address program weaknesses, but the program continues to have structural deficiencies, including a lack of accountability. The Minnesota Job Creation Fund will replace JobZ providing a more accountable alternative. This program provides Minnesota with flexible and effective tools to craft incentive packages that would be most appealing based on deferring business financial needs. The Job Creation Fund is a statewide job creation incentive program. It's a performance-based statewide grant program, follows incentive program's best practices, and would provide financial awards to businesses that meet industry requirements as well as minimum capital investment and job creation thresholds. This is a pay-for-performance program. It would provide a maximum award of $1 million following performance through two incentive award components: a grant for capital investment on real estate for new and expansion or a remodel of up to $500,000, and up to $3,000 in a job creation award for each new job created, up to a total of $500,000. There's an incentive for higher wage jobs in this bill. So with a job creation award, $1,000 would be awarded for each new job created that pays at least $26,000 but less than $35,000. $2,000 would be awarded for each new job created paying at least $35,000 but less than $45,000, and $3,000 for each job paying at least $45,000. Key components of this program is that it's strategic. Benefits for each firm would be provided for a predetermined time period and capped at a dollar value. It's transparent. Our benefit cap values would be stated in the business subsidy agreement with the company to easier communicate the value of that incentive award. It's accountable. Firms receive benefits only after the private investment or job creation takes place. Streamlined and equitable. It offers a statewide program without economic development zones. And there's a performance threshold. Enrolled firms need to create at least 10 full-time jobs and invest a minimum of $500,000. And again, we feel that this is budget responsible because incentives are capped, which allows for a more predictable budget and easier planning by deed. And I would just like to say that there are, I know there's a profit bill that was introduced. There are many similarities between these programs. They're both statewide. They both are built on lessons learned from the Job Z program, and both have similar investment and job creation requirements. So thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. And I believe we have members of the audience who would like to testify on this today.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm sure there'll be questions, so we'll have the other witnesses down. Representative Clark, did you want to?
I do have a question.
If you have
them, go right ahead. Wait until.
No, go right ahead. Okay.
So I was just noticing, Commissioner, on page 21, lines 21.6. And it talks about the business subsidy agreement, what it means. A business subsidy agreement must include but is not limited to, and then you have duration of the agreement, job goals, timeline, and so on. If I'm not mistaken, in the rest of 116J, we also say with job and wage goals, and I'm wondering if that's just an oversight that you left wages off there, because you do talk about wages later on, so mm-hmm. It seems to me like that might need to be included there.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, I believe that could be an update that we would need to make.
Okay, thank you. Why don't I call down the other witnesses and don't go too far. We have someone from Life Science Alley and St. Paul Port Authority. We'll take the Port Authority if they want it. Ms. Louder, how are you doing today?
I'm wonderful, Mr. Chair. How are you?
I'm good. I'm sure I have the sneaky suspicion you're talking in favor of this, so please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Lori Louder. I'm the Director of Business and Intergovernmental Affairs at the St. Paul Port Authority. Just a few comments. I'll try to be brief. Both the St. Paul Port Authority and the Economic Development Association of Minnesota, EDAM, have similar legislative platforms in that they support a range of economic development tools and incentives. And of course, as you can imagine, Mr. Chair, economic development tools are critically important for the success of business and jobs growth. And I might add, we think for the success of the economic health of the state of Minnesota moving forward. We believe that Minnesota both must retain its businesses and also welcome businesses that are new to the state. Sometimes the focused use of economic development funding, be it for, say, for example, contaminated brownfields cleanup or expansion financing or other tools, serves as the difference. It makes the difference between a company staying in Minnesota or leaving. Let me give you a quick but important example, if I might. There is a company at the confluence of 494 and Highway 61 at the far southern end of St. Paul. It's a 116-year-old company by the name of Gerdau Ameristeel. It has 377 jobs. And it's controlled by their home office in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And we found out about a year and a half to 2 years ago that they were being shopped by several states. And Mr. Chair, I must say that Texas really put on the full tilt as far as trying to get them to move out of Minnesota. You can imagine what that would have done as far as tax base and job loss. Not to mention the supplier networks and the business that they would lose if Gerdau were to have left Minnesota. There was a key partnership that was formed. It includes the following entities: the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce, Xcel Energy, the governor, Governor Dayton, the mayor of St. Paul, Chris Coleman, and the city council, and the St. Paul Port Authority. We all worked very hard, very diligently, and I'm happy to say that last May 31st, when there was a great celebration out at Gerdau, they made the announcement that, in fact, they were staying. Mr. Chair, what was used to help them stay? In addition to the governor holding up his cell phone saying, "You have my number, so if you need anything, please call," and that was part of his welcoming speech, it also included a lot of hard work on the part of Deed and the other partners. Gerdau received about $250,000 in MIF funds, Minnesota Investment Funds, and also some tax increment financing. So that was, as an example, Mr. Chair, we believe at the Port Authority in the value of partnerships. They come in many forms, as you can imagine. We can leverage at the Port Authority funds that the private sector cannot, be that federal new markets tax credit financing, or with the great and wonderful partnership between Deed and the St. Paul Port Authority regarding particularly brownfields cleanup, we can cure defective land, contaminated land, and make that developable, as I've testified here in the past. We also work very closely to make certain economic development programs maybe a little bit better. Mr. Chair, your bill that I was here testifying on a couple of weeks ago to tweak the security feature of the Deed Demolition Loan Program is one example of that. Mr. Chair, in summary, I would say that this Job Creation Fund is very significant. We're very excited about it. Yes, you're right, Mr. Chair. I am here to say that this hopefully will be approved by the committee. It's an across-the-state program, as is the profit bill. This will be very helpful for the entire state. It has many terrific features, different features as Commissioner Clark Sieben just outlined, and it is truly exciting. And I would be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lauer. Are there any questions? Representative Kiefer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering if the CEO of Gerdau could comment on the new Dayton tax proposal and if there's any regrets or consideration on that moving forward since they were talked into staying here.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I have not heard any specific comments at all from Gerdau, and I am not aware that they've made any comments. They may have. I'm just not aware of it.
Follow up?
Sure.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Is anyone from the Chamber, the Minnesota Business, Independent Business Foundation, anybody here to comment on MIF and if this is a good program that'll bring jobs to Minnesota?
Representative Kiefer, we're actually on the Minnesota Job Creation Fund, not MIF. It's
okay.
MIF is coming, I think.
MIF is coming. Okay, so how much are we asking with the job creation bill then, Mr. Chair? This is not the $15 million.
This is $12.5 million per year. And I was going to ask the commissioner a couple of questions about it.
Okay.
All right.
I'll follow along then with that. I'd just like to hear, Mr. Chair, more from the private business community to make sure that this is something that indeed is going to be enough to attract jobs to Minnesota. Thanks.
Well, we're going to hear the full bill, so we'll pass that along to the chamber. I think Representative Gunther had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just want to make a statement that it's a great start. I think the profit bill was basically my idea for the last couple of years, and we take a lot of what I had and we put it in the JCF, and I think Minnesota is going to be very well served.
Thank you, Representative Hunter. I hope it is. Representative Leiter.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and that was part of my question.
I'll
try to just keep it at these two questions. Can I understand maybe from you, Mr. Chair, the framework that we're going to, as we go forward? I mean, is JCF supposed to, is going to replace Job Z, and is it going to replace profit, or are we going to meld the profit and JCF together? Or could you just kind of give us your idea on where are we going? We're not going to have both bills. I'm assuming
it is early yet, and yep. It's still open to a number of different things. As I've said before, the governor gets to propose, and we get to legislate. At this point, I believe the governor's bill is looking, and we can certainly call the commissioner up and ask. But from the way I am taking this, the job creation fund will replace Job Z. And profit.
Okay.
Profit hasn't been funded. That's the problem.
Right. Thank you. I just was looking for that kind of overview there. And I'd like to ask the testifier question, please, then.
Louder or the commissioner?
No. Ms. The Port Authority.
Go right ahead.
Yes. Thank you. And I don't have your name right in front of me.
It's those glasses you can't find.
That's probably the problem.
If you'd like to ask Ms. Louder a question.
Ms. Louder, thank you. Ms. Louder, as you were going through the example with Goodell, what was going through my mind was, do you find that most companies that you deal with are interested in essentially the same types of things that can help them, that would help them stay here, continue to operate in the state? Do you find that they all ask for the same types of things, or do you find it varied by company?
Ms. Louder.
Mr. Chair and Representative Leidiger, it's across the board. There are some common themes. For example, when a business is growing, particularly in the industrial sector, which we focus on at the Port Authority, it looks for location. It looks for size of property. It looks for clean dirt so that it can build its new facility and continue its working life. And so that's a theme because they cannot, of course, pencil out a return on investment by taking over a contaminated and defective site that may, in fact, need some infrastructure as well. So that's one theme. Another theme is sometimes companies are looking for financing of equipment and real property. and that comes in many different forms. So I think the bottom line answer, Mr. Chair, would be that although there are some themes, typically each project, each case is a little bit different.
Thank you. Commissioner, could you come to the table, because I'm not sure if all the questions are for Ms. Lauder, but I've got a couple for you when we're done. And you've got a follow-up?
Just one follow-up. So having said that, does the JCF program, does that give you the flexibility? And this could, maybe the commissioner could also address that as well. Would this plan give you enough tools to be able to do your job?
Mr. Chair, I would defer to the commissioner, but I would say in brief that it's a nice additional set of tools, because what's important in the economic development toolbox is to have a varied number of tools that work in individual cases per business customer.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, we do believe that this is an essential tool for the state to move economic development forward. Just to give you a comparison of what the state of Minnesota is competing with on a daily basis for business expansions, relocations, Texas has over $200 million fund. Iowa has $113 million fund. Wisconsin was $112 million fund. They are doing these deals too, and we're not asking for $112 million. We're asking for what we believe that we need to have a seat at that table and to win some of these negotiations. Economic development deals are not just about incentives. They're also about having a strong education system, a strong higher ed system, a skilled workforce, our geographic location. But in order to get these deals done, we need to show these businesses that we value their investment in Minnesota and be able to offer them an incentive.
Thank you, Commissioner. I see someone has snuck up behind you there. I'm wondering if he had something to add to the for testimony or?
When appropriate.
Why don't you grab a chair there, and we'll, if you've got something to add to this particular bill, please feel free.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Hello, my name is David Collins. I'm the executive director of the Hubbard County Regional Economic Development Commission in Park Rapids.
Welcome
and actually,
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I count Mr. Purcell as one of our representatives for that area, so he's
a lucky
close,
man.
Part of our
a
county.
Lucky man.
Yes, we are. Actually, I'm here today to scope out the hearing chamber. We've got a committee hearing coming up in this committee here soon on another bill, and I'm here by accident, but I've been doing economic development and chamber work for about 25 years, and I did 13 years in Iowa before I moved here 6.5 years ago. Over the years, I recruited Serta Manufacturing, Pella, Orange Tree, a $400 million power plant, Team Industries, a cookie manufacturer, pizza dough, etc. And, excuse me, when I moved from Iowa to Minnesota 6.5 years ago, to take the economic development job and get married up here, I fully expected Minnesota to be way ahead of where we were at in Iowa, Missouri, Nebraska, and Idaho, where I'd done economic development before. So I was very surprised to find almost no tools available to us as economic development directors, especially in the rural areas. And as somebody who participated in Sell Iowa trips on a regular basis into Minnesota, this was one of our favorite markets to come to. We did Sell Iowa trips all across the country. And when we did those, the telemarketing department at IDED, they called it, would do a lot of phoning into the target market, set up appointments in teams of two with business cards that made us look like we were from the governor's office, would visit businesses. And this was a very ripe territory for us. The 13 years that I was in Clear Lake, Iowa, we recruited a Serta mattress company. And that was a company that was going to build a new facility in the five-state region, the two Dakotas, Nebraska, Iowa, and Minnesota. And the only criteria they had was that it would not be in Minnesota because of the tax structure, workman's comp, etc., but yet as close as possible to Minnesota, because that's where they figured that 70% of their market was eventually going to be in that five-state region. So when they found out our community was just across the border on I-35, that made us a very attractive community. Cole Sewell was a storm door manufacturer in St. Paul that initially moved to Clear Lake again because of taxes across the border. They were later bought by Pell Windows and then bought by Larson Doors, which currently operates the facility. The last company I recruited when I was in Clear Lake was a company called Orange Tree. They're still located and headquartered in the Twin Cities here. And they wanted a production facility outstate or out of state for better wage rates in rural areas, better retention of employees. But they also had to have a very high level of infrastructure, broadband infrastructure. We were successful in locating them in Iowa, partially because of the infrastructure we had, but also we had a program called the 260E and 260F training program. And that was a very attractive program that we had to attract businesses, that and then a program similar to what the director is proposing today. The 260E and 260F program in this particular company was going to create 7 jobs on day one. We had a minimum wage requirement of $13.11 an hour plus 80% of benefits. By the end of year one, they'd have 20 employees, year two, 40, year three, 60 employees. Based basically on that information only, we had this magic little formula, and I could come back to that company on day one and said, we will put $273,000 into an account at our local community college for job training. Those funds can be used pretty much at your discretion as long as they are job training related, so they could bring people to the cities for training, bring people from the cities down there to do training, send them to Germany to learn how to use a piece of equipment. They could use it for wages, 50% up to 90 days. The company was in charge of their job training, and they paid the bills, and they got reimbursement from this fund. And the fund was created by figuring out the new income taxes that were going to be created over a period of time, and not all of it was used. Some of it still went to the state. They figured out the cost of money and the administration and came up with this $273,000 figure to be left. The community college issued bonds, put the money into the fund, and it was repaid then by the new income taxes generated from new jobs or from retained jobs. So there was no appropriation for it. It was basically, I hate the term, but tax increment financing on job creation as opposed to building buildings and creating property value.
Mr. Collins, before you get too, I understand where you're going. That's actually a bill we heard with Representative Ward's bill, and whether it follows through here or not, it's another story because it ended up over in taxes. But so to the job creation fund.
Right. Yep, I digressed a little bit, and I'll wrap it up. I think it's a very important first step that Dee needs to take. I think Dee needs a lot more money than they have, a lot more tools than they have, and I'm looking for a lot of changes, indeed, with Katie's direction, and I would urge your consideration of this bill. Thank you,
Mr. Collins. I appreciate it. I've got a question for the past chair, Representative Gunter. Think we have enough tools in the toolbox in the state of Minnesota?
I think we now have at least a pair of pliers.
Couple.
I think we need a lot more. I look at Iowa as someone.
We don't need to sing the praises of Iowa now.
I'm not. I was born there, but besides that, I left and came to Minnesota wrong when I was very young. But I think that indeed we have to improve our ability to attract businesses. Our ability to train businesses is without peer, as far as I'm concerned. We are the biggest contract. Deed is the biggest contractor with Minsky we have. And I think we have a lot of things going for us. That's why he moved to Minnesota. That's why I came to. I didn't have any choice. But anyway, I think my profit bill has got a lot of strong points. The governor's bill's got a lot of strong points. I plan on talking to many economic developers to see if there's ways that we can take more from one to the other and put it in the other to make the one that we end up with, which I assume, since the governor's got a lot more chutzpah than I do, it'll be the governor's bill. And I look forward to working with the commissioner and her staff to get that done.
Thank you, Representative Gunter. I have a couple of questions for the commissioner. Now, the Minnesota Job and Job Creation Fund. Typically, we have done economic development on a 2-year cycle. We fund it for 2 years, and then the commissioner has to come back here and beg some more. Is that the intent with this particular bill, or is there something else going on?
Mr. Chair, members, this bill does include $25 million for the biennium in ongoing funding. We feel that this is very important so that the department can appropriately plan. We're at a position at the moment with our MIF fund that we'll soon talk about where we don't have a dollar left in that fund, yet we have companies knocking on our door that are saying, what can the state of Minnesota offer? So by having that ongoing funding, we'll be able to better plan and allocate that funding.
And Commissioner, I'm going to actually take the prerogative of the chair for a little while here. Could you tell me, typically with the MIF funding, it's been a one-time deal. With Job Z, it was you came into the program, you had all this whole litany of things that you got, and you always got them. With the Minnesota Job Creation Fund, from the sheet that you handed out, it doesn't look like it goes on for 10 years or 12 years. I think I heard you say 3 years. But is this a one-time connection to the company, or can you come back at a later time? If so, could you explain how that would work?
Mr. Chair, members, we could have multiple connections with one company. Basically, how this would work, we would set a business subsidy agreement up front with the company, name the level of investment that they're looking to make, as well as how many new jobs they're planning to create. We would set an appropriate incentive amount for those job creation and private investment limits. Once they achieve those goals, then they would receive the grant. So no money is exiting the state until that private investment is made and until those new jobs are created. Then the Minnesota company is looking to do an additional expansion at some point in time, they could be eligible for a second business subsidy agreement, but not until those first goals are met with the first agreement.
And thank you. And Commissioner, one of my other questions was a little history of what other states have done, but I think Mr. Collins kind of covered that one. Members, I'm going to make sure that we're going to have a lot of time, but I'm going to bring up House File 3. Commissioner, are you sticking around or are you leaving?
I will stick around.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you're going to testify on the Minnesota Investment Fund also. Oh, you are. Okay. So we had a couple more people. We had Ugoam, Leidiger, and Fabian. We're going to get through the Minnesota Investment Fund, and then if you've got questions, and this commissioner's jobs bill as a whole, the governor's bill is coming up next week. So if we don't get to all your questions today, write them down and put them in the save file. Oh, don't give me that dirty look. Representative Slavik.
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry.
I've got treats for everybody because it's my first.
All right. Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
But I have to warn you, I didn't look at the back of the box until after I bought it, and they're like 220 calories per piece of candy.
Great.
Awesome.
I'll take it for you guys. I'll take it.
It's like, really? It's too bad.
Thank you.
I know, right?
Wow.
Embarrassing.
Thank you very much.
What, do I need to bring power bars or something?
Wouldn't kill you.
Bar.
Yeah.
Are you
going to
take one?
Yeah, I offered, you know, I had my first bill hearing the other day in a particular committee, and I made sure that I offered. I got like 25 or 30 cigars in the office, and I thought I'd bring them down, and I got a dirty look. I don't know. So, anyhow.
Do I have to make a motion to move this to...
This, I think, is being laid over.
I'll make a motion to move House File 3 to be laid over.
Well, thank you. And please proceed to speak to your bill, and we'll get some testifiers going. I'm not sure if Mr. Lynn is here, but yeah.
Today I have the honor of introducing new funding for the Minnesota Investment Fund. This has been a very successful program. And it is in Governor Dayton's budget. I'm asking for $300 million, and Statistically, they tell us that for every dollar invested in this fund, we get $33 returned.
I think I'm gonna stop you right there because I think I heard you say $3 million and I thought it was $30
million. $30 million, I'm sorry.
There you go.
Okay, thank you for correcting me. Okay. Okay. The MIF in the last 8 years has created, has funded 53 projects. It has retained 837 jobs, and new jobs created was 3,056, and it's estimated by deeds that this money will create 10,000 jobs. And with that, I'm going to turn this over to the commissioner and let her talk about the program.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today regarding the Minnesota Investment Fund, and I'd like to thank Representative Savick for bringing forth this important legislation. The MIF Loan Program provides financing to create and retain high-quality jobs to improve economic vitality for all Minnesotans. MIF funds are dispersed to local governments and then provided as a loan to the business. The loans are attractive to businesses because they're upfront and they can be used to offset capital expenditures, which are often equipment purchases. All projects must meet minimum criteria for private investment, number of jobs created or retained, and wages paid. And some loans have been forgiven depending upon the transaction requirements. This program has had great success over the years. The recent $3 million appropriation by the legislature in the 2011 session and all current MIF loan repayments are now already committed to projects, making it impossible for Minnesota to compete for major job creation expansion when incentives are the final determination of a location decision. I did also want to mention that the governor's bill on MIF includes language that would allow the agency to provide a MIF loan directly to a business when the entire loan may be forgiven. This will streamline the process and not require short-staffed cities to administer the loan when no repayments would be received. In conclusion, I'd like to say that recapitalizing MIF shows a long-term commitment to enhance job creation and economic growth throughout the state. This is a proven tool in our toolbox and one that we know will have great success in years to come with attracting and retaining companies. And I believe there are members in the audience who would like to testify.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'm sure there's going to be questions. So let's bring the other two testifiers down and then we'll be here. Come on down.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you. Charlie Vanderardi with Metro Cities, an association of 86 member cities in the 7-county metro area. Metro Cities supports House File 3 and the funding for the bill this year. We support competitive and continued funding for the Minnesota Investment Fund as it helps fund the economic development at a local level. City Council support proposed projects and partner with the state to support capital investments in their community. The program has been oversubscribed and the funding level in House File 3 would go a long way to supporting jobs and business growth in the metro area. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Novinsky. I'm the Community Development Director for the City of Coon Rapids. We recently, in the last few years, have been able to utilize MIF for a couple of projects that I'd just like to tell you about. First, I would just say, as the Commissioner did, MIF is a staple. I've been in economic development for over 15 years, and it's been a program that's been around and been successfully used. In the last few years, it has not been very highly funded. We were fortunate with one project that, I guess to someone else's detriment, that a project didn't go through, but it did open up funds for us to take advantage of. But I think that gets to the point that you end up with projects sort of competing with each other, and one community's loss is another community's gain, and certainly not probably in the best interest of Minnesota. But MIF, I think, is a it builds capacity for cities by creating opportunities for loan funds. Cities used to be able to retain all of the MIF dollars. Now cities retain 20% of that loan. We're then able to use that to do additional loans and future loans. So there's not only money coming back to the state to fund the MIF fund, it's also building capacity for cities to continue to do that kind of work. And it does, frankly, create a lot of goodwill between the company, between the city, and between the state. I can tell you that companies really are impressed when the state representatives are at their site. Mr. McKinnon was, frankly, at one of our projects, and that carries a lot of weight with the companies. So it's an important tool that way. Two quick projects. We had a company called BioVest that was an existing firm in Coon Rapids. They have developed a vaccine for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So this is personalized medicine. They also had a product that I'll just crudely describe as sort of a minor or a small clean room. And they basically can take out the parts, dispose of them, put in new parts, and they've got sort of their own little, you know, clean room. And they need this because if they've got 50 or 100 or 500 different individualized vaccine, those little mini clean rooms are very important to meet FDA requirements. But the company they were in a kind of a tight spot. They had underutilized space. They needed to create just better facilities so that they could grow. And between a loan from the city, some $250,000 from the MIF fund, and the property owner all kind of coming together and pooling funds to make this project happen, we were able to retain 24 high-paying jobs, technicians, scientists, very well-educated people, and also attract another 14 jobs to the company. So we're very excited, very proud of this company, and we hope to see great things from them. I should also point out, too, that we were competing with a location in Florida. Their parent company is located in Florida, and it's always nice when you've got your investment close by. So we were very happy that this MIF fund plus the city proceeds, we were able to keep that company in Minnesota and in Coon Rapids. A second example is a company called Steinwall Incorporated in Coon Rapids. Very successful plastics manufacturer, one of John Deere's preferred manufacturers, woman-owned business, and just been very, very successful. But they were growing rapidly. They've done some additions, but they needed to add some equipment to create efficiencies and be able to continue to work with their vendors. And through a $170,000 MIF loan, they were able to do exactly that. And I'm happy to say that the company is growing by leaps and bounds. They've had to lease additional space in both Anoka and Hennepin County. And actually, the owner has become very, I think, engaged in our community. She recently chaired a business retention and expansion project that we're working on with the University of Minnesota Extension. So, again, I think the MIF fund helps not only to fund business expansion, but it also helps to build goodwill between the private and public sectors. So, just two examples. Again, you know, this $15 million that's being talked about is significant, and I think would do an awful lot of good throughout the state. You know, there are a lot of good projects out there, but there's still concern about risk, and so anytime some additional funds can come in to help banks feel a little bit more comfortable making those loans or fill gaps, or if we're running into problems where the appraised value and the construction costs aren't quite aligning, a program like this really does help to move projects along and to create jobs.
Thank you. We've got five people. I have a question for the commissioner. Oh, we have one more testifier? Come on down. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Bruce Lyman. I'm the Vice President of Facilities and Business Development for Chart Industries. I'll tell you a little bit about Chart. We've got we're a design and manufacture cryogenic equipment for the storage and distribution of liquefied gases. We've got 14 manufacturing facilities in 8 different states in the U.S. And 3 foreign countries. So we've got a large global footprint. We're happy this year to be celebrating 50 years with some deep roots in New Prague, Minnesota. And that's the facility I personally hail from. In the last 2 years, we have expanded to 2 new facilities in Minnesota. One in Owatonna is a manufacturing facility, and very recently an engineering office in Burnsville. Also, we have a very major expansion going on in New Prague. We've got a 110,000-foot building in construction. They're pouring cement today. Steel structure is up. Wow. This represents a $23 million investment for Chart. Over the past 2 years, we've added 250 employees in Minnesota. We currently have over 600 employees in Minnesota. All of these employees are high-skilled welders on our shop floor or primarily engineers on the office end of our business. This expansion in New Prague will add 80 more jobs, and we're very grateful to DEED and the MIF Fund for participation in this program for our expansion in New Prague. It was very helpful to make this location and this expansion more competitive with other options. And is a key reason why this expansion is happening in Minnesota. It's very helpful to protect the jobs that we have and to secure the Minnesota expansion. I think it's very important that there are tools available, and as the commissioner has mentioned, it's important to be able to come to the table and have tools available to have discussions with companies like us for expansions or relocations. And I encourage the support for this BIF fund to use for the investment and growth of existing businesses. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Please stick around. Commissioner, could you come back to the table? I'm going to ask my one question, and then I'm going to open it up for questions. What is the interest rate? Do you charge an interest rate for MIF loans?
I'm going to actually ask our executive director, Kevin, my friend, to join us to talk about specifics about the program.
Mr. McKenna, please identify yourself for the tape. Answer the question.
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McKenna, the executive director of the Business Community Development Division at DEED. The interest rate that's associated with the loans that we give, it's typically between 1% and 4%, depending on how it fits in with the total financing package. Sometimes we can go a little lower. We're a little more flexible with terms in some cases, and we're certainly in the position to be subordinate to other folks as well.
Hopefully all the testifiers are here. So, I'm going to open it up for questions for a few minutes here. We had three people from the Job Creation Fund, but I'm sure you could come up with a question if you wanted on the MIF or both. Representative Uglem?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I do have some questions on both. Whoever wants to answer this, I guess. In the MIF Fund, we talk about these loans and everything else. Granting the loans. What about the role of the banks in this, and how do you interface with them?
Mr. Chair, members, as part of any financing package, obviously we're working with a number of partners, including the city, and there's typically almost always private financing that's involved within these transactions. To the extent that the local communities, and you've heard from some of them today, they are very well connected with the financial institutions in their localities. And every time that we're dealing with, most times that we're dealing with projects, typically the banks are at least a part of the transaction.
Okay. I guess really a follow-up with the Minnesota Job Creation Fund. Commissioner, I think you can answer this. Now, this is replacing jobs, and we're looking at $25 million. What was the jobs fund cost?
No, I think the
jobs Z.
Jobs Z.
Yeah.
Over the annual yeah. biennium.
Mr. McKenna.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe the number is $26 million per biennium, and then there was $14 million associated with that on top of that, which is the property tax aspect of it.
And if I could add one clarifying, the Department of Revenue would need to get that specific number since that is a tax credit program. But we did base our Minnesota Job Creation Fund level of $25 million based off of what activity we've seen from the Job Z program.
Okay. Mr. Chair, that's pretty much what I was looking for. And then follow up, we talk here about the Minnesota Job Creation Fund leveraging $450 million in additional private investment, and you talked a little bit about how you're leveraging that, but could you expand on that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. Mr. McKenna.
Mr. Chair, members, we've put some numbers together based upon what we've seen in the last year from an expansion perspective, what we're seeing in the pipeline today, also with the amount of credits that would be or rebates that would be associated with those projects is how we've come up with that number. Typically with such as the Minnesota Investment Fund, we're $33 of leverage for every MIF dollar that's put into that into a project. It's relatively similar on the case of this. Just as an example, if you're looking at a $10 million construction cost on a building, which would be about 100,000 square foot manufacturing facility, that's how you're getting to about the $500,000 limit on the taxable purchase that would be rebated. So when you've got a $10 million project in a construction project, you've got a lot of equipment also that's being invested by the company in that, so you can see how exponentially the amount would rise.
Okay. And then just one further question, Mr. Chair.
Go right ahead.
With the JCF fund here, there are some awards that individual companies can achieve. How did you benchmark that, and do you foresee any problems with granting these awards to companies?
Commissioner or Mr. McKenna?
You can start now.
Mr. Chair, members, the way that the numbers that we've chosen, the $500,000 in investment, the 10 new jobs, once they achieve those numbers, obviously then the money will be rebated back to the company. From a construction perspective, you're typically going to do that in the first year, so at that time it would be sent back. From a job creation standpoint, the companies typically have 2 years to create the jobs, and that's through a business subsidy agreement and business subsidy law. After that time frame, they would have to hold those jobs for a year before they would be eligible for the rebate on the job creation side.
Okay.
I'm going to...
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's it anyhow.
I wanted to thank Mr. Lyman for coming up from New Prague. I mean, it was probably not the simplest drive today, and your investment in Owatonna is, thank you very much. We at the state level, I think you get a thanked quite a bit, and I think we at the state level, whether it's Republicans or Democrats or independents, I don't think you hear that we appreciate that kind of investment by the business community. Oftentimes they get bashed for one thing or another. It's part of the game, we all know it, but I do want you to understand, I don't think there's anyone on this committee that would not say thank you for maintaining your plants here and making an investment in Owatonna. I know there was a lot that was put around the table, and I'm glad that you made the choice. Finding the welders will not be easy. Having been a welder at one time, a bad one at that, so don't ever ask me to come down and show you, try to teach anything. Thank you, and again. I'm going to, Representative Leiter, you had a question?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. You know, when it comes to the MIF and the job programs, the JCF, you know, I think whether you're a Republican, whether you're a Democrat, we know we need these tools to attract businesses and retain businesses here in the state. And the problem is everything else that goes with it. These are not the only programs that a CEO looks at, an owner looks at, when he's going to move his company. I mean, there's the entire, you know, tax structure, and now we're talking about fourth tier taxation. I mean, don't forget, yeah, that's right. you know, and this is what companies are looking at. Now, I do have a question, and it's really for the executive director, I think, and maybe commissioner, you can address it too. But what percentage of the MIF funds are being used to attract new businesses versus the existing businesses? Give me a sense of that, and here's what I'd really like to know. And I don't know if you've got this kind of data, but I want to know how that has changed over time. Because that would really tell us something. Because I could be wrong. I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe owners do like just coming up here and getting soaked. Anyway.
I could answer that one with so much fun, but I will call on, I'm going to just ask Mr. McKenna to answer that one, and I'll keep my mouth shut.
Mr. Chair, members, in the past 6 or 7 years, as we look at expansions that have happened throughout the state, it's pretty typical that about 85 to 90% of all expansions that take place in the state are from existing companies. About 10%, 15% are new companies that are investing into the state. From elsewhere. Typically, those facilities might be a branch manufacturing plant, it might be opening a sales office to start, those types of activities. That is pretty traditional across the U.S. When you start getting down into some of the other southern locations, it might get up to about 20% from elsewhere, but we're typically around 10 to 15%.
One follow-up, because I know there's other questions. The one follow-up I have is, and Commissioner, maybe you can address it. I know you haven't done it that long, but you probably have looked at these statistics. Have we lost some of these companies? I mean, when you're out there competing, are you losing some of them? You know, you can't win them all. But and what are you hearing from them?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, yes, there have been instances where we've been competing for a deal and they went elsewhere. But we assist with nearly half of the 96 business expansions that happened throughout the state last year. We added 50,000 jobs to our economy last year. And there's many positive things happening in the state right now with the economy. I've mentioned at previous hearings, we have the 12th fastest job growth rate in the country. And we've recently been compared with our friends in Wisconsin often, and they have the 42nd fastest job growth rate in the country. So there are...
You do Iowa too?
Let me see. I might be able to. We do, you know, we see that when companies are looking at where do they expand, where do they relocate, there's many things that they're looking at specific buildings, at specific cities, it's transportation networks, it's skilled workforce, and we believe that in order to be successful, Minnesota needs to have $30 million in that MIF fund, $25 million in that job creation fund to ensure that we do have a seat at the table. And that we aren't having to do as we currently are when we have companies that are looking at expanding, relocating, where we're saying, we have this MIF program, here's how it works, here's what you're eligible for. but it's currently under review during the legislative session. We'll know more after that session. So,
I just want to say thank you for that comment, and I also want to reiterate, this is a bipartisan issue. I mean, this is something we do kind of come together on.
Yeah, we just don't have any control over the tax committee.
That's right.
I'm going to take the chair's prerogative. We've had multiple Republicans now, but we have one Democrat that wants to jump in here. Representative Clark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to first of all say this chart, whether or not your wonderful staff or somebody over at Deed created this chart, it's great. Only I think it should also add the MIF to it, the one that compares the different programs. Because it's really helpful.
I'm sure somebody smart will get one for us.
Okay. So there's that. And then the question I had was, and it applies to both programs, but I think MIF in particular, just noticing that some of the businesses, well, two things. One is when a business gets a loan forgiven, I'd like to know what the criteria are for that. And then secondly, what kind of clawback provisions are there in each of these, I guess specifically MIF, for when the business, doesn't meet the standards that are set out in the business subsidy agreement. And I was noticing that some of the businesses that have benefited from MIF include our two Arctic Tech and Polaris. And if I'm not mistaken, I think one of them has decided to go elsewhere and write some part of that. I'm not sure. Anyway, I'm just wondering what kind of clawback we have for businesses that might receive the benefit and then, change their mind in some way or don't meet the standards that they're trying to meet.
And I'm so glad that CHART does not have to have any clawbacks in their contract. Mr. McKenna, Mr. McKenna.
Mr. Chair, members, when we talk about forgiveness of these loan funds, it's basically when we get to a last resort on projects, and that's when obviously there is a competition. There are non-Minnesota options, and we have to bring a little bit more to the table. I think it should be well known that every time we start this, we start with a loan. We ask, we offer the loan aspect of this. The other aspect of this is as had been mentioned earlier, the community keeps the first or 20% of the repayment. So before we start forgiving any money, we want to make sure that the community is also on board with forgiving its portion of that. So we may go from an interest rate to a 0% interest rate to matching what the city forgives from $100,000 to ultimately, when we have to, going to forgive the entire amount. As it relates to the clawbacks, they have provision basically in their business subsidy agreement that gives them 2 years to not only make the investment, which the Minnesota Investment Fund can be 50% of whatever they're funding, up to generally about $500,000, and they have 2 years to create the number of jobs, and we have formulas that are based on about $20,000 per job in a loan situation. So if after 2 years, if they've created those jobs, then the there's no need to claw it back, and it's simply a loan. As they continue to pay back that loan, they must maintain that same number of people. Otherwise, we can demand that they pay back a little quicker, an accelerated payment. If they don't meet their two-year guideline, again, we can call the loan and ask for it back within a year.
Representative Clark, any follow-up? Representative Clark, any follow-up on that?
Mr. Chairman, is that the agency's practice, or is that in the legislation? Or?
Mr. McGann.
Mr. Chair, members, that's the agency's practice, mm-hmm. And part of our administration of the fund.
So, Mr. Chairman, I think I'm as interested as anybody here in making sure we try to keep businesses here in Minnesota. So when a business has received significant investment from us and they leave, even if they've met their agreement, is there any consequences for that at all?
Mr. McKenna.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, members, in a case such as that, if they have completed successfully completed their business subsidy agreement, then no, there would not be any aspect of a clawback at that point.
Thank you.
And I'm going to move on. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kind of taking up a little bit where Representative Leidiger was, too. And Commissioner, you talked about, you know, we have the 12th fastest growth rate in the nation, and I'm really happy about that. But I also have to point out the fact that over the last 2 years, we put some policies and procedures in place that the governor recognized in the State of the State address that I think contributed a lot to that, some of our permitting reform and just a whole host of things that we've done. I'm concerned, and I'd like your reaction. I'm concerned that, and I know it's a difficult question for you to answer, and I'm not trying to play gotcha with you, but I'm concerned that the path that the governor's proposed for the next biennium is kind of directly opposite of where we've been the last 2 years. Is there a model out there that can give us some sort of a look into the crystal ball, you might say, of where we're going to be 2 years from now based on the proposed budget?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, members, I think that the governor has proposed a bold budget that shows both where we should be investing and also where those revenues should come from. Some of that conversation is obviously for other committees to be discussing, but I think that these economic development incentives are key investments that we need to be making in order to be competitive with other states. You know, we're directly, Kevin and I are directly involved in talking with companies in looking at these relocations and expansions. Our agency is frequently interacting with businesses either in Minnesota looking to expand or companies from outside of the state. We know that we need these tools to be competitive. So we definitely need these investments, and we do have real job growth numbers based on past performance of the MIF program and from what we've seen from the Job Z program.
Thank you, Commissioner. And just so you know, that over the last 10 years, this committee, depending on whose accounting you use, is either $150 million less per year or $300 million less per year. So in other words, so everyone realizes that we have taken just about every economic development tool that this state had in the past decade and gotten rid of it or cut it down so much that it is ineffective or useless. This, I want to say to the governor, thank you so very much for taking the lead to putting these tools back into your toolbox. I can't thank him enough. This has been something that many of us have been harassing people on, and I'll defer to the past chair, and then we'll come back to you, Representative Fabian.
I can't agree with you more. While I was chairman of it, Governor Plenty took 35% and 35% away from this committee.
Every year?
And 35% in one year after another. We lost 9.5% 2 years ago, and I think your commitment with the speaker was that you don't want this committee if they're going to cut funds further, and I appreciated that. So hopefully we can put those tools back in, and this is a big step forward. I might make it better, though.
Representative Fabian, would you
thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up, if I may, you know, I'm concerned, like Representative Gunther said, you know, we're putting a prior into the toolbox, but I'm also concerned that we're taking out a whole bunch of other tools. You know, when you represent businesses that I do from northwestern Minnesota, I've watched them over the years expand to North Dakota and Iowa and Wisconsin. And, you know, right now we're kind of facing a housing shortage. And I've had some conversations with some of the people in business up there. And they're concerned that, you know, if some of these taxes continue to go on, that, you know, we're not going to have a housing shortage in northwest Minnesota. That's a real difficult conversation to have with business people up there. And the fourth tier that Representative Leidiger is talking about, I don't want to put a screwdriver in there and take out a whole bunch of other tools, you know, that are going to send us backwards. And I'm very, very, very concerned about that. So I'll end with that. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Actually, thanks, Representative Clark. That was kind of where I was going on the loan issue. Is the list of loans that you provide public information, and are the ones that are forgiven public information? I see you nodding.
Yeah. Mr. Chair, members, yes, it's all public information.
Okay. Yes, thank you. So I don't even remember who was speaking. I'm listening to everybody up there talking, but someone said, you know, some of the concern is risk, and I just want to make the comment, well, who takes the risk? We, the state, are being a banker for businesses. So I'm wondering with the CEO or the CFO from Chart, I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
I'm Bruce, and I'm just a lowly vice president.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, you just mentioned that you have a $23 million investment, and I just wondered how much of that was MIF. Maybe you don't even know.
I do know. Okay. MIF was $499,000. So it's about 2% of the project.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. One more comment, Mr. Chair. Please, thank you.
And you know what? I'm going to get you the number on Amazon in Texas, but yes, go right ahead.
Well, no, I just want to say that I think the best tool in the toolbox is to listen to a lot of the data, and I'll just mention the Itasca report is a good example, but there's others that say we just need to reduce the cost of doing business, and that's going to grow jobs in our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keeper. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The question that I want to pose actually is for the one of the previous testifiers that was company recruitment, so if you could come down to the testifying stand again.
Remember which one it was?
Right there.
Mr. Collins?
Yes. Thank you, sir.
Please come up to the table there, if you could.
And if Mr. Lyman could stay at the chair, and if the author of the bill could stay at the chair.
And you wanted the author of the bill also?
Yes.
Musical chair.
Mr. Albert.
Mr. Collins, in your testimony, you mentioned that you actively recruited businesses for various states away from Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
And in your testimony, you brought up two points that seem near and dear to most business owners, and that's why I asked Mr. Lyman to also expound on this. But you mentioned taxes, and you mentioned workman's comp. And I'm trying to find out, it seems like, I'm just wondering, what's the lead in promoting a business to be drawn away from the state of Minnesota? What's your first card that you lay down on the table in terms of making your play for a company in the state of Minnesota to move out of the state?
Can I add in there, could you also, what's your first play for your card to bring them up to Hubbard County?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and specifically Mr. Albright, I guess in my years of economic development, I guess the first thing that I stress when I'm trying to recruit a company to a community that I represent is that we're looking for long-term relationships. We're looking for companies that want to be a part of our community and create a win-win situation. And if we were attracting companies solely on incentives and so on, those aren't the quality or the type of companies that we would want to recruit. So we first start that out and then sell the community. And I've been fortunate in the communities I've represented to have some pretty good assets to sell. But then it gets into the incentives, and depending upon the company that you're visiting with and the homework you've done before you meet with them, which ones you're going to emphasize, whether it's a workforce development, whether it's your natural resources, your transportation, or tax incentives, things of that nature. But it's, you know, I've recruited companies that, quite frankly, incentives didn't matter. We did a $400 million power plant. And it was done by Alliant Energy, and they could have done that within a region within several states. And that project depended more upon the infrastructure, transmission infrastructure, the availability of land, the transportation system to get there, things of that nature. So the quality, real quality companies are going to care about incentives, but that's usually not their number one factor. I spent almost an entire year trying to recruit a target distribution center. And probably 80% of my time for a full year. We came in number two, and the reason we lost it was because of It was cheaper to build it in Clear Lake. It was cheaper to operate it in Clear Lake. Close, but cheaper than another community in Iowa. But opportunities for trailing spouses or significant others were less in the Clear Lake area than they were in a Cedar Falls, Waterloo area. So there's all sorts of factors driving those decisions.
Mr. Chair.
And you've got whatever you call, you got a two-minute window, so you got to keep your question a little short.
Mr. Lyman, I'll direct this question at you then. Notwithstanding the longstanding roots that you've got in the community, and I'm familiar with Electromed as well as Scott Equipment just across the street from you, when you looked at that development and when you look at the long-term nature of profitability for your own organization, I'd just like for you to expand in terms of how meaningful would it be to have a lessening of the tax structure in this state as it would reflect upon your way of doing business.
Mr. Chair and members, I think the discussion brings two things in my mind. There's ongoing operating costs, and there's influence on discrete decisions. I think when you've got a cost structure that is high, you will leak jobs out until a company collapses because it's cheaper somewhere else, and it might not be that company that goes somewhere else, but it's that company's competitors that will take that business away bite by bite. So you have to have a cost structure that remains competitive, and that will also have organic growth in jobs if you have that. Then there's the other situation where, for whatever reason, a company is making a discrete decision, whether an expansion decision or a relocation decision or so on. Multiple factors involved. The reference to a target distribution center, that's so much about operating costs and where they're located. So they're very geographically constrained and is very, very cost sensitive. In other influences in our business, perhaps a little bit, the skill of our workers is very, very important, and there's a lot of inertia to the folks that we have. And so it's not easy for us to make a decision to move somewhere else because you lose all of the people and the expertise and so on that's involved. But that's for our business because our products are technical in nature.
Members, we are at the end of our time, and I wanted to make the motion, ask the Reverend Slavik to renew her motion to lay the bill over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
I renew my motion.
And Representative Lohmer, you had a question, and we're going to get to that, but probably not till next week because everything's coming back. And I wanted to thank the commissioner and the testifiers. This has been an interesting, and I hope it's been an informative one. So with that, your bill is laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Jobs and Economic Development Bill. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you, members.